Would you introduce yourselves, please, in any order you care to?
Sure thing. I'll start with myself. my name is Emil, and I sing and play the bass and guitar.
Amazing.
I'll also introduce myself. My name is Eric, and I play guitar and keyboards.
Oh, hey, I'm Mark, the drummer.
I'm David. I play guitar and bass and sing.
We got your new double EP, released basically one track at a time. You are, 10 years ago you formed in New York. I don't know if that's accurate. Now in Los Angeles. Several albums, and I'll do it in the announcer voice, what's left of it. Two EPs combined as one. Songs that didn't fit on Bloodshot Tokyo, but were still worthy. Two different moods. This is kind of an interesting concept, because most bands these days will go, oh man, we can put out B-sides till the cows come home. But I usually ask younger bands what the filter is for one of their songs. But I'm going to kind of, and I want all of you to kind of answer this, because I know you're going to have different approaches to it. How did you know, as you're putting together the album and you're like sequencing it and you're like, we can have so many tracks, and even though it's not a CD anymore, we only want to stream this many of them. Where did it fall that these songs suddenly became non-B-sides and became these two entities? And we're going to go deeper, but I want to kind of start there.
I think a lot of it came down to the fact that some of these songs were a lot of people's favorite songs in the band. So usually with us, a B-side is like, oh, we all kind of like it, but it doesn't quite fit the vibe, you know, but we don't necessarily like it as much as, you know, some of our favorites. But with these particular songs, a good handful of them were, you know, some would be my favorite songs, and, you know, Eric's favorite songs. I mean, everyone had different ones, but
that's right.
Yeah, there's an element of that, but also just there's a democracy factor, but then there's the, like, you know, with this one, we kind of had some songs that were more one person's favorite, as opposed to, like, with our records, usually it's like everybody's got to be all on board. With this, it was like, oh, like, these are my favorite songs, these are your favorite songs, and we just kind of put them all out. So it didn't feel B-side-y to us, you know, just because we like the song so much.
I guess they felt more like singles, like, it was just jumping off of what David over here said, and that's why we released them as singles for the most part. And then,
where did the idea come up of releasing them as singles to lead up to the release of the EPs? And when you started releasing them as singles, did you even know that it was going to suddenly turn into two EPs, which
we knew, turn into a combo punch? We kind of planned it out that way. We knew before we released any of them that we were going to release eight of them as singles, and then they would be divided into two six-song EPs.
And you go to your label and go to Roll Call and say, hey, guys, we're about to mess with the entire album cycle.
Actually, Roll Call went to us and said that. We just dug the idea, so to speak.
Ah, yuck, yuck, yuck.
Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Taking that whole maelstrom of complication of, oh, we got these songs, they're our favorites, and now we're dividing them up and we're making them into things. How did the process go from there? How did you end up with, like, two cohesive things?
Well, we had things that we recorded at the same time that we recorded our last full-length record, Bloodshot Tokyo, and that were, like, left over, like David was saying, that we felt really strongly about.
How many, and I'm interrupting personally because I'm a New Yorker and I can't, how many were there that were from Bloodshot, actual songs?
I think about seven, and then we recorded about four or five, something like that. We ended up, like, we realized that these songs from Bloodshot Tokyo kind of fall into this vibe and have this specific mood and come from the same place spiritually and sonically. And then how do we flesh out that EP with other songs?
But this is such a half-assed way of working. It's like, wait, okay, we got these extra songs. Yeah. And then we're going to write some other songs to go with the songs that were the extra songs that we liked. But then we have to all agree upon the new songs that go with the extra songs that we sort of liked.
But In another sense, it's,
by the way,
opposite.
I didn't mean that in a mean way. I'm just saying it all worked, but
well, it's half-assed in that sense, but it's not half-assed in the sense that we had like 100 songs that we had written, and that we were trying to figure out the best way to put at least a few of more of them out into the world, and we didn't think that an album was the most was the way that it represented those songs.
I ain't seen that nowhere. All I've seen is, well, they had some extra songs and they added some songs along with it. I didn't see I didn't see the 100 songs part.
Yeah.
That kind of clears up a little bit of the half-assedness.
We have a lot of songs and we were just,
I think part of it is cuz you don't want to, you know, put in your press release how many songs you wrote, you know?
Because
I think
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. And then it's also like,
should be so lucky.
It's just the amount, the numbered thing never really sounds that impressive. Like, oh, we wrote, because anybody, like, oh, we wrote 100 songs. Like, oh.
The point is, you had enough of the 100 that you really didn't write new songs to go with this, which is the way.
We did. We did that as well.
Wow. That's nuts.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
We had a lot of music that we wanted to put out in some way, and it didn't feel like those songs belonged on Bloodshot Tokyo, and it didn't feel like they all belonged on one album, another album together either. And we thought this was the best way to represent those.
Highland Park, masquerading as Bushwick, does it?
Sure, yeah, you nailed it.
Why, is it gritty enough? Is there enough graffiti? Is it still scary?
It's a beautiful, more beautiful version of Bushwick. But it's, you know, it feels kind of cliche being a band living in Highland Park. Like, we met this band that's
not
playing
as cliche
right now
as living in Silver Lake or, you know, or in, you know,
it's
right.
Starting to
right
feel
there
that way, you know, but it's an amazing place. We're very lucky to live there.
Tell me about the spiritual center of Moonlight Baby.
We had gone away right before we went to record these Bloodshot Tokyo songs. We went up to a lake and, you know, we did the whole, like, go to a place in the countryside and write songs kind of thing. Exactly. So we did that whole thing, and that was one of the first songs that came about from, I don't know, from all being together up in this place that's not New York City, and it's not, you know, in a Brooklyn rehearsal space. And I don't know. It's one of those things where, you know, I guess you could say it's like a breakup song kind of thing, but it's you know, it's always, you can never really go too into that in like a thing, I don't know. Yeah, it's one of those, like, you know, moving forward in life kind of songs.
You know, there was an intention when you're sequencing, when you're putting these two things together. I mean, do you really see it as guitar versus synth? Because I kind of hear synth sneaking in with guitars on both and vice versa. But,
sure, yeah.
But, I mean, really, where was that dividing point where you knew here, 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 here? I mean, we're not going to go song by song.
Yeah.
But there is.
Felt it out.
Yeah, this just wasn't a really deep thought.
Yeah.
There wasn't really a deep thinking behind it. It was just like what felt correct. Pretty much.
Yeah, we just felt it out. This one feels like it goes with this one. This one feels like it goes with that one.
Before we go to Mr. Swift,
mm-hmm.
who unfortunately
is
no longer with us.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. But all the things that came before that, because that was 3 days of mixing.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about studio, where you recorded, who produced, how it, you know, how much demoing, all that goop that...
There's a lot of goop.
Yeah, tell me some goop.
As far as the demoing goop, we demoed for at least a year where we just kind
of... It's a lot of goop.
Yeah. We demoed and we kind of just kept building up the songs and then just kept pushing ourselves to... You know, the goal was just to keep writing until it feels like we have something. And then, you know, after a year and a half or whatever, finally felt like it started to come together. So then we went up to Outlier Inn in upstate New York, which is like one of the most amazing studios ever. It's a beautiful place with, you know, farm animals and everything. But then we recorded for another like 6 months with our friend Matt, who helped produce. And he was amazing. Kind of just working with us almost 24 hours a day for a really long time, just getting everything else dialed in.
He's got a studio called Proper
Pop.
It's called Proper
per.
Pop.
What?
Proper
Pop. We also did just a little bit of goop that fell off the edge there.
Oh, yeah.
Sling back
what's
onto
the goop?
The, Give us the good cone. Stuff. It was we recorded drums for Tarkin Studios as well. And we recorded with 50 different mics on the drums. Because no, we didn't really need all that. We just didn't know how to make any decisions.
Yeah.
And then so we just pissed off like Richard and whoever got their hands on trying to mix it. Because
so let's talk about Richard Swift. One of the things that I read is that he likes to turn it up really, 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 really loud.
Yeah, there's a lot of
really. So were you there for the really, 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 really loud? And did you appreciate why that was?
I think he was deaf. He's a genius, but I think he was, I mean, that's where my brain went, is that, oh, is this, he's talking about a guy that's been on the road. Had been on the road for many, many years and worked with so many great bands
So what did you bring him? Did you bring him
50 drum tracks on every
song? Yeah, no, but seriously, did you just bring him a pile of tracks and in 3 days he went boom, boom, boom?
We worked with him remotely for like over the course of a month and then we finished it up in 3 days where we had to be there. Yeah, no, he worked really fast and he worked really fast a few people had done initial mixes for us and his was incredible and we'd been fans of his work for a long time. We were just sort of fanboys around him and he couldn't have been sweeter. Like when we went up there to work with him, he treated us like family and he took us out to dinner with his family and he was just one of those magical people that was both the genius and like completely accessible, like zero like rock star vibe.
Love when that happens.
But mostly just we would call him like the king of the cool dudes because he was just the coolest dude. We were just kind of in awe of him.
When you're in the van, you've been at this a while and you've had a career. But when you're in the van, do you ever turn to each other and again, not exactly this, I'm paraphrasing, and say, wow, we've been at this. We've made all these records. We're on this label. We tour. We're the opening act at decent sized venues. You know, they're not the toilet circuit in the UK anymore. But where are we at and where are we going? Do you ever actually sit down and go, we've gotten to this modicum. We've gotten to this place. And
You have to be crazy not to think that sometimes. Any kind of artist life, if you choose that life, you're gonna live. You're making a choice to live in highs and lows, and not in the sort of compressed space that most people live in of sort of stability and happiness. And I think you have highs that are higher and you have lows that are lower. And when you're experiencing those as a unit, as an entity with four people, you're going to experience both of those together. You'll have those kind of conversations where like, wow, this like you have an amazing show. That's a high that is indescribable. And then if you have a not so amazing show, it can be a real down in the dumpster kind of deal. But I think we've been making music together for a long time. You know, we grew up together, writing songs and jamming together, and I think we, as long as that is the fruit of that is always satisfying, and we're always like enjoying collaborating and creating something together as a unit. So the question is like, how do you continue to do that, and how much is that making you happy? And you know, you just keep cranking.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside. And then you get to play whatever you want to in between.